We've never lost an election. We're winning this election.
That is the stance that has led to a unique political situation in the United States. It's Thursday, December 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a warning about no quick end to the COVID pandemic, even with the vaccine. Australia might soon require technology firms like Google and Facebook to pay for journalism. We go to Hong Kong to talk about continuing arrests of protesters. And in Bangladesh, controversy over a Rohingya move to a new island. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump has now lost dozens of post-election lawsuits aimed at overturning President-elect Joe Biden's victory. As the president's legal challenges fail in court, December 8th marked the safe harbor deadline, where states finalized certification of their election results, further limiting Trump's ability to contest it. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has the latest.
In the 5 weeks since the November 3rd election, there have been celebrations,
USA! USA!
Protests.
It's a fraud. It's been stolen.
Yes.
It's been stolen. It was rigged.
And several state recounts and dozens of legal challenges over the election. And none of it has changed the result. Joe Biden won the 2020 election. But President Donald Trump is not ready to concede.
We've never lost an election. We're winning this election.
Aziz Haq is a professor of constitutional law at the University of Chicago.
The closing of the safe harbor is merely another nail on the coffin of the president's efforts to overturn the due result of the election in court through false claims of voter fraud.
Results finalized by the safe harbor date are considered to be conclusive by Congress. All states have certified except for Wisconsin, expected to certify later this week. John Fortier is the director for governmental studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center.
But if an election were certified after December 8th and electors were selected, as long as they were selected by the December 14th, when they actually cast their votes, Congress certainly could count those votes when they count the votes in January.
The president has mounted dozens of legal challenges in seven states where he lost: Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Nevada. He has won one lawsuit and lost more than 40, with several unresolved in Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court on Tuesday denied an appeal of a lower court ruling against a lawsuit seeking to overturn Pennsylvania's vote.
Don't steal my vote!
As his legal team failed in courts, Trump's Attorney General Bill Barr also said there was no evidence of widespread fraud. But Trump supporters continue to threaten election officials, causing one of them, a Republican, to push back. Gabriel Sterling is the voting implementation manager in the state of Georgia.
It has to stop. Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language.
After losses in court, Trump has intervened by pressuring officials and legislators in Georgia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania to overturn the election results. Although these attempts failed, they expose vulnerabilities in the American electoral system. Aziz Haq from the University of Chicago.
Only time will tell whether what comes out of this election is a renewed commitment to the integrity of the electoral system, particularly at the level of the states, or what we've learned is how fragile our election system is, how close we've come to a really dangerous outcome.
On December 14th, the 538 people designated as the United States Electoral College will meet in cities across the country to formally cast ballots for president and vice president. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Though the arrival of a vaccine appears imminent, experts are warning there will be no quick exit out of the coronavirus pandemic. Correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
Virtually every state has been reporting a surge in COVID-19. Nationwide, cases per day have eclipsed 200,000 on average, with the tally kept by Johns Hopkins University showing more than 215,000 yesterday, while more than 2,500 Americans died of infections. Yet health officials worry it could still get worse after many people disregarded warnings not to travel over Thanksgiving and have ignored other safety precautions. In California, where upward of 22,000 people have been testing positive each day, police arrested nearly 160 people over the weekend, many maskless, at a massive house party advertised on Instagram. I'm Ben Thomas.
Regulators in the United Kingdom say people who have a significant history of allergic reaction should not receive the new Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine while they investigate two adverse reactions that occurred on the first day of that country's mass vaccination program. More from Zuria Sheckley in London.
Professor Stephen Powers, National Medical Director for the National Health Service in England, says health authorities were acting on a recommendation from the Medical and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, the nation's medicines regulator. He also says the MHRA has advised on a precautionary basis that people with a significant history of allergic reactions shouldn't receive this vaccination after two people with a history of significant allergic reactions have responded adversely. Zaria Shakili, London.
We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The Australian Parliament is due Wednesday to consider legislation that would require technology firms such as Google and Facebook to pay for journalism provided by news organizations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
For years, traditional media companies in Australia have complained that social media platforms benefit from their quality reporting without paying for it. The government in Canberra believes that regulation is needed and is introducing new legislation into Parliament. It's unlikely to pass until the new year. Australia wants tech heavyweights Google and Facebook to negotiate with broadcasters and publishers to agree how much they'll pay to use news stories online. The fee would be worked out by the two parties. If a deal can't be struck, both sides would be forced into arbitration, where a decision would be made for them. The only two digital platforms included so far are Google Search and Facebook Newsfeed, but Australian Treasurer Josh Frydenberg would have the power to add others to the list if they become big enough players in the market.
This is a huge reform. This is a world first, and the world is watching what happens here in Australia. But our legislation will help ensure that the rules of the digital world mirror the rules of the physical world.
The government says print media in Australia has seen advertising revenues fall by 75% since 2005. The market is dominated by Google and Facebook, which have opposed the legislation. They've argued that traditional media outlets have overlooked the benefit they receive from referrals and clicks through to their websites. Facebook has said previously it would remove Australian news content from its platform altogether, arguing it didn't contribute much to its revenue. The company also said it supported journalism in Australia through grants and funding. Facebook Australia said it would review the draft legislation when it was published. Google advertisements in Australia have insisted the laws would be damaging. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Police in Hong Kong arrested eight more activists Tuesday over an anti-government protest in July. Reporter Rhea Mogul spoke with VOA's Steve Miller about it.
So Ted Hui, the one who's been making headlines the most, he is a former Democratic Party lawmaker, and all of the others are part of the opposition camp as well, who were heavily involved in last year's anti-government protests in Hong Kong. Now, Ted Hui and the others, they resigned along with the rest of their camp last month after Beijing voted out their colleagues out of LegCo. He was out on bail and awaiting trial on charges related to last year's anti-government protests. Ted, in particular, he left the city for Denmark last week with the court's permission to attend climate change meetings, only to announce later that he had decided to enter a self-imposed exile in the UK. And then shortly after his arrival there, he said that his bank accounts and those of his family members who bank with various banks in Hong Kong, including HSBC, Bank of China, and Hang Seng Bank, had been frozen. So there's several other lawmakers. Eddie Chu is one of them. Eddie was also part of the opposition. He posted on Twitter saying that he is out on bail and he has to appear in court again next in a few weeks' time.
Carrie Lam, the city's chief executive, came out and criticized Ted Hui for making comments about the banking system. Can you explain a little bit about what the rationale the authorities have given for freezing the assets?
Yeah, so the police have said that the reason they've frozen Ted Hui's bank accounts was to do with a money laundering sort of attempt that Ted Hui was involved with. Now, in a press conference yesterday in Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, our chief executive, attacked Ted Hui, stating that if any damage had been done to the financial sector, he was the one who did it. She said during this press conference, and I quote, that Hong Kong's monetary and financial systems are robust as ever. And she urged the public to question sort of the character of Ted Hui. And what we know so far is that the police are continuing to investigate.
Reporter Ria Mogul speaking with VOA Steve Miller. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. For the past 3 years, most of the 700,000 Rohingyas who fled violence in Myanmar have been living in refugee camps in southern Bangladesh's Cox's Bazar. VOA's Muazzam Hussein Shakil covers the first group of Rohingya refugees being relocated to Bashan Char Island. Besan Hamdar narrates.
Since the Rohingya exodus from Myanmar, millions of Rohingyas were displaced in refugee camps in the region. Bangladesh's Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina told the United Nations in 2018 that there were roughly 1.1 million Rohingyas living in overcrowded refugee camps in Bangladesh. On Friday, more than 1,600 Rohingya refugees were relocated to Bashan Char, an island that rose from the sea less than two decades ago.
We like it here. We were provided assistance at our earlier shelter, and we hope to get assistance here as well.
After coming here from Cox's Bazar, we are getting everything as promised by the Prime Minister of Bangladesh.
Non-governmental organizations have begun working to provide humanitarian services to the Rohingyas in Bashan Char, as Rohingyas prepare themselves to live there permanently. For the time being, they are provided ready-made food and have also been promised to receive daily necessities.
You can see a festive mood in all. We have prepared facilities to keep 100,000 homeless Rohingyas here. 22 NGOs are doing voluntary work to help settle Rohingyas here. Everything is going smooth.
Human rights activists believe the island is prone to floods and not safe for Rohingyas. However, the Bangladesh government disagrees.
Another wrong piece of information they were given is that the Bashan Char Island will sink, which is wrong. There are 75 islands surrounding this Bashan Char, and they have been there for a long time.
The relocated Rohingyas have been sending their updates to their relatives in Cox's Bazar. Bangladesh government will monitor the first wave of refugees and how well they do before relocating the next wave of Rohingyas. For Muazzam Hussein Shakil in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, Behzhan Hamdard, VOA News.
This is VOA Asia. Those aboard a Royal Caribbean cruise to nowhere from Singapore were told to stay in their cabins Wednesday after a COVID-19 case was detected on board, forcing the Quantum of the Sea ship back to port. Libby Hogan reports.
One of those so-called cruises to nowhere, a much-hyped cruise trip with no destination port to keep with travel restrictions, has apparently backfired, because a COVID-19 case was found aboard one from Royal Caribbean and has now forced nearly 1,700 passengers into isolation. The cruise, which was only open to Singapore residents, was meant to be sailing just off the city-state and planned no stops. Now the Quantum of the Sea ship has been forced back to port, authorities said. All passengers had cleared a mandatory test for the virus up to 3 days before the cruise started on Monday. But an infected passenger, an 83-year-old male, had reported to the onboard medical centre with diarrhoea, and passengers were told of the infection early on Wednesday. Royal Caribbean and the Singapore Tourism Board said all guests and crew of the ship who had close contact with the infected guest had subsequently tested negative for the virus. The passengers and crew will stay on board in their rooms until contact tracing is complete.
That's correspondent Libby Hogan. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.